Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I had someone came around to our house today, and we were sitting at the kitchen table, and we're kind of in a transitory state of gathering up belongings in our current rental, facing into a future that is, as of yet, somewhat unclear. But I'm going through my, you know, the stuff I own and identifying things that could be gotten rid of. We talked about the experts in moving, the army logisticians previously, who we take inspiration from. And one of the things I'm looking at it right now that probably should be thrown out is a big, huge collection of discs. The person was very amused. He said, "Are those CDs?" And I said, "CDs, these are M discs." And I got into MDisc. It's definitely one of my weirder tech phases. I mentioned before that our internet was really, really bad up till a few years ago. It was so bad that I couldn't upload. And this is, you know, my wife and I, we had to, like, if she was on Zoom, we couldn't be on Zoom at the same time because the bandwidth would not work. But I was actively producing YouTube content, and as a backup fan, I'm not sure if fan is the right word, but as a believer in backups, whenever I finish my YouTube videos or sometimes shot some good stock, I'd want to create a backup. But getting that up to the cloud was a non-runner. The only way I ever figured out to sort of do it was starting it up overnight, and then you'd have to remember to turn it off. And it didn't really work. So after a bit of thinking, I decided to go old school. And landed upon Blu-rays. I was surprised to see that they still existed, to be honest, much less that there was this intriguing technology called the M-Disc. The M-Disc, and I interviewed the founder of the M-Disc, Barry Lunt, on YouTube, for anyone who wants to learn more about it, it's kind of a derivative of the Blu-ray, but it has a fascinating mechanism. It's kind of like etching it into rock, and it's supposed to be lifetime durable. So I still have these, and I'm now at the point where I'm thinking we don't really have space for these, so just toss them out altogether now that we have super fast cloud internet. But I know that there, part of me says there may still be a use for it. One of the uses for optical media that we can talk about is Worm, the write once, read many times. And I was actually recently setting up a Worm bucket on S3, which is, of course, modern cloud storage for storing evidence. And that's a big use for it. I was surprised to see there's actually Worm. There's a whole industry of specialized Worm media, Worm USBs, Worm hard drives. And, of course, you could just use stuff like a Blu-ray or an M-Disc that are inherently Worm. The only other place I've seen them in recent years outside of the context of, you know, audio enthusiasts is actually in medical imaging, where if you get a x-ray done or whatever, sometimes you have to request it, but they'll give it to you on a CD. Sometimes USB, but sometimes you'll still see a fair amount of CDs being delivered, and usually to very curious people who are wondering what on earth they have to conjure to be able to read this. So, but they're still out there. They're still on Amazon, and if you click onto like one of the verbatim Blu-ray listings, you'll see, you know, 10,000 people bought this last month. So someone's buying them. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Optical media, the last time I was really looking at it, there was, you know, everyone was, there was kind of enthusiasts, and then people saying, "Are you being serious? This is obsolete." And the only kind of hope that I saw for it was this idea of digital archiving or permanence that we can talk about bit rot in another episode. And that's something that actually, even if you leave stuff on a hard drive, can actually really happen. It's a real thing. And M-discs might have some advantage there, but the capacity is a bit constrained. And there's always been this talk of these manufacturers are going to solve opticals traditionally are now tiny capacity, much like floppy disks today are totally unsuitable. And that might breathe some life back into the technology. Although I have to be honest, I'm not counting on it. But Herman and Korn, optical media in the year 2026, who is still using this stuff? How much of it is out there? And is this talk of high capacity optical a pipe dream that'll probably never come true? Is there any future, or is it time for us to reluctantly accept that these are just digital frisbees? Herman and Korn, let's talk about the state of optical media in 2026.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn, and I'm sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem, which, if you could see it, is currently a bit of a disaster zone. We're in the middle of a bit of a shuffle here at the house, and our housemate Daniel has been unearthing some absolute relics from the back of his closet.
Herman Poppleberry, reporting for duty. And yeah, Daniel's closet is basically a time capsule. He came out earlier holding this spindle of discs like he'd just found the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's funny how something so common just 15 or 20 years ago now looks like an artifact from an ancient civilization.
It really does. Daniel sent us a voice note about it because he was looking at these M-discs he used to use for backups, back when the internet here wasn't exactly what you'd call blazing fast. It got him thinking about whether optical media is actually dead, or if it's just gone underground into these specialized niches.
It's such a great question because we tend to think of technology as a straight line, right? From floppy disks to CDs to DVDs to the cloud, and once we move to the next stage, the old one is supposed to just vanish. But that's rarely how it actually works.
Exactly. And Daniel mentioned something called worm media, which stands for write once, read many. He noticed it still showing up in medical imaging, and even some high-level cloud storage architectures. So today, we're going to dive into the state of optical media in January 2026. Is it a nostalgic hobby, or is it the secret backbone of the world's most important data?
I love this topic because it hits that intersection of physics and information theory that I find so fascinating. Most people think of their data as this ephemeral thing in the air, but it always has to live on something physical. And as it turns out, plastic and glass are still remarkably good at holding onto bits and bytes.
So let's start with the basics for those who might not be familiar with Daniel's specific find. What exactly is an M-disc, and why would someone use that instead of just a regular recordable DVD or Blu-ray?
Right, so the M-disc is essentially the prepper version of a DVD or Blu-ray. If you look at a standard recordable disc, the way it stores data is through a layer of organic dye. When the laser burns the disc, it's chemically changing that dye to represent ones and zeros. The problem is that organic dye is, well, organic. It degrades over time. It's sensitive to light, heat, and humidity. We call it disc rot.
I remember that being a big fear in the early 2000s. People would back up their wedding photos to a DVD, put it in a drawer, and 5 years later, the disc was unreadable.
Exactly. It was a huge issue. The M-disc creators, a company called Millenniata, decided to solve that by getting rid of the dye entirely. Instead, they used a proprietary inorganic layer resembling stone or glass. Instead of a chemical change, the laser literally carves pits into this rock-hard material.
So it's basically digital stone carving.
Precisely. They've done testing where they've submerged these things in boiling water, baked them in industrial ovens, and exposed them to intense ultraviolet radiation. The claim is that they can last for 1,000 years. Now, whether we'll have a drive to read them in 1,000 years is a different question, but the data itself is theoretically permanent.
That's a long time to wait for a backup to finish. But Daniel mentioned that he used them because his internet was slow. That's a very real-world constraint that we often forget about in our always-on world. If you have a terabyte of video footage, and your upload speed is 5 megabits per second, the cloud isn't a backup solution. It's a pipe dream.
Right. And even now in 2026, while we have great fiber in Jerusalem, there are plenty of places where the cloud is still just someone else's computer that you can't actually reach quickly. But the really interesting part of Daniel's prompt is the mention of warm media in industries like medical imaging.
Yeah, why is that? Why wouldn't a hospital just put everything on a massive server array or a secure cloud bucket?
It comes down to two things, compliance and the air gap. In medical imaging, like an X-ray or an MRI, you often need a record that is legally guaranteed to be unalterable. If you store a file on a hard drive, even a secure one, there is a non-zero chance that someone or some piece of malware could modify that file.
I see. So the right one's part of Worm is the feature, not a bug. Once those bits are carved into the disk, you can't uncarve them. You can't overwrite the data to hide a mistake or a piece of evidence.
Exactly. It's a physical guarantee of data integrity. In legal circles and medical fields, that's worth its weight in gold. And then there's the air gap. A disk sitting on a shelf isn't connected to the internet. It can't be held for ransom by a group in another country. If your hospital gets hit by ransomware and your entire network is encrypted, those optical disks in the archives are still perfectly fine.
That's a powerful argument for old tech. We spent the last decade trying to connect everything to the network, and now we're realizing that for the most important stuff, being disconnected is actually a security feature.
It's the ultimate defense, and it's not just small-scale stuff. Did you know that some of the biggest cloud providers are actually using optical storage for their cold tiers?
Wait, really? When I upload a file to a Glacier-style storage, it might end up on a laser-edged disk.
It's a real possibility. Companies like Sony and Panasonic have been developing these optical archive systems for years. We're now seeing Generation 3 systems that can hold about 11 terabytes in a single cartridge. They look like giant robotic jukeboxes. They have these cartridges that hold 22 high-capacity Blu-ray-style disks. When you request a file that's been archived, a robot arm literally goes and grabs the cartridge, puts it in a drive, and spins it up.
That sounds like something out of a 90s sci-fi movie. But I guess if you're storing petabytes of data that only needs to be accessed once every 5 years, you don't want to pay the electricity bill to keep hard drives spinning 24/7.
That's the huge why behind it. A hard drive has a motor, a spindle, and sensitive magnetic heads. It uses power even when it's idling, and it eventually wears out just from the physical motion. An optical disk sitting in a dark, climate-controlled box uses exactly 0 watts of power. It can sit there for decades without any degradation. For cold storage, it's incredibly efficient.
So, if the tech is so good for the big players, why did it feel like it vanished for the rest of us? I mean, I don't even have a disk drive in my laptop anymore. I think the last time I saw one was on that old desktop we have in the basement.
It's the classic trade-off between convenience and durability. For 99% of people, the convenience of clicking sync and having their photos appear on all their devices outweighs the risk of the company going bust or a server farm catching fire. We traded forever for right now.
That's a deep point, Herman. But let's look at the pipe dream part of Daniel's question. Is there a future where optical media makes a comeback for regular people, or even just as a more mainstream industrial tool? I've heard rumors about 5D storage and glass disks.
Oh, now we're getting into the really cool stuff. This is what I've been reading about lately. There's a project out of the University of Southampton, and Microsoft has been working on something similar called Project Silica. This isn't your grandfather's DVD.
Project Silica. I remember hearing about that a few years ago. They stored the original Superman movie on a piece of glass, right?
Yeah, exactly. They used a femtosecond laser, which is a laser that pulses at 1/4 of a second to create tiny structures called voxels inside a piece of quartz glass. It's not just on the surface, it's three-dimensional. That's where the 5D comes from. They used the three dimensions of space, plus the size and orientation of these tiny structures.
And how much data are we talking about? Because a standard Blu-ray is what, 25 or 50 gigabytes?
Project Silica is aiming for terabytes on a piece of glass about the size of a coaster. And there's a newer player called Cerabyte that's using ceramic layers on glass to store data at the petabyte scale. The durability is insane. We're talking about thousands of years. It can withstand being boiled, baked, and even scoured with steel wool. It's essentially a permanent physical record of human knowledge.
That sounds like the ultimate black box for civilization. But for Daniel, sitting at his kitchen table with his M-disks, the question is more practical. Should he keep them? Is there going to be a way to read them in 2040 or 2050?
That is the hardware gap problem. You can have the most durable media in the world, but if you don't have the interpreter, the drive, and the software to read it, it's just a shiny coaster. We're already seeing this with floppy disks and even some early CD-ROM formats. The bit rot might not kill the data, but the interface rot will.
I think about that every time I see an old zip drive. I have files on those from university that I literally cannot access without buying a legacy drive off an auction site and hoping I can find a driver that works on a modern operating system.
Precisely. This is why some people argue that the cloud, for all its flaws, is better because the provider handles the migration. They move your data from old hard drives to new ones, from old formats to new ones, without you ever knowing. You're paying for the service of keeping the data alive and accessible.
But you're also paying for the privilege of them having control over it. If you stop paying your subscription, or if they decide your content violates a new policy, poof, your data is gone.
And that's the weird niche that Daniel has found himself in. The M-Disc is for the person who wants to own their data in a physical sense. It's for the person who doesn't trust the cloud to be there in 50 years.
So, let's talk about the current market. Daniel mentioned he saw Blu-ray discs on Amazon, and thousands of people are still buying them. Who is that? Isn't just people like Daniel with slow internet, or is there a physical media counterculture happening?
It's a mix. There is definitely a growing community of people who are declouding. They've realized that when you buy a movie on a streaming service, you're really just renting it until the licensing agreement changes. We've seen movies and shows just disappear from people's libraries.
Right. The digital ownership is a lie realization.
Exactly. So there's a small but very passionate group of people who are buying 4K Blu-rays because it's the only way to ensure they actually own the movie. And the quality is significantly better too. Streaming bit rates are heavily compressed. A physical 4K disc has a much higher bitrate and better audio.
I can attest to that. Whenever we watch a movie on disc versus streaming, the sound alone is a world of difference. But what about the professional side? You mentioned medical imaging. Is that still a big market?
It's huge. In fact, in many parts of the world, if you go for an MRI or a CT scan, they will still hand you a CD or a DVD to take to your specialist. It sounds archaic, but it works. It's a standardized format called DICOM that every hospital system in the world can read. If they gave you a USB stick, the hospital's IT department would probably have a heart attack because of the security risk.
That makes total sense. A CD is read-only. You can't put a virus on a finalized CD that then infects the hospital's network. A USB stick is a wide-open door.
Exactly. So optical media is the safe way to transport sensitive data between air-gap systems. It's slow, it's clunky, but it's secure.
You know, it's interesting how we often view old technology as worse. But in this case, the limitations are the benefits. The fact that it's slow and hard to change is exactly why it's still used.
It's a feature of the physics. But to Daniel's point about high-capacity optical storage, is it a pipe dream? Well, we've been hearing about holographic versatile discs, or HVDs, for 20 years, and they never really made it to market. The problem is always the same. How do you make the drive cheap enough for a consumer to buy?
Right. It's one thing to have $1 million robotic jukebox in a data center. It's another thing to have a $50 drive in a laptop.
And that's where the industry is stuck. We have the tech to store terabytes on a disk, but the lasers required and the precision needed for the tracking are so high that the cost doesn't make sense for a regular person. Why buy a $200 optical drive and $20 disks when you can buy a 2 terabyte portable SSD for $80?
But the SSD will fail eventually. The data on it will leak over time if it's not powered on. It's called charge leakage. If you leave an SSD in a drawer for 5 years, there's a good chance some of the bits will have flipped.
You're preaching to the choir, Korn. This is the data dark age I've always worried about. We are creating more data than any civilization in history, and we are storing it on the most fragile media ever invented.
That is a terrifying thought. If there's a major global catastrophe and the power grids go down for a decade, all our digital history is just gone.
Unless it's on an M-disc in Daniel's closet.
Exactly. Daniel might be the librarian of the future. But seriously, it sounds like the future of optical media isn't going to be a return to the glory days of everyone having a CD player. It's going to be this high-end, industrial cold storage solution.
I think that's right. we're going to see glass storage become the standard for National Archives, for the GitHub Arctic Code Vault, and for big cloud providers. It's the forever tier of the internet.
And for the regular person, maybe we'll see a niche boutique market like vinyl records. People who want that physical connection and that guarantee of ownership.
I could see that. Limited edition physical releases of games or movies on high durability media. It's a premium experience.
So, Herman, if you had to give Daniel advice on his M-Disc collection, what would it be? Keep them or toss them?
Oh, definitely keep them. But with a caveat, if those are his only backups, he should probably also have a copy on a modern drive, and maybe a cloud backup too. The 3-2-1 rule of backups, 3 copies, on 2 different types of media, with 1 copy off-site.
I like that. The M-Disc is his long-term insurance policy.
Exactly. And he should probably buy a spare external Blu-ray drive and put it in a vacuum-sealed bag next to the discs, just in case they stop making them in 10 years.
That is the most Herman Poppleberry advice I have ever heard. Vacuum-seal a spare drive? I love it.
Hey, you'll thank me when the great cloud crash of 2035 happens.
I'll be knocking on Daniel's door asking to borrow his Superman M-Disc.
But in all seriousness, the state of optical media in 2026 is actually much healthier than people think. It's just moved out of the spotlight. It's in the X-ray rooms, it's in the high-security government vaults, and it's in the basements of tech-savvy people who know that the cloud is just a fancy word for someone else's hard drive.
It's the quiet, steady turtle in the race against the digital hares. It might be slow, but it's going to be the one that's still around at the finish line.
Beautifully put. And I think it's a great reminder for all of us to think about what we actually own in our digital lives. If you have photos of your kids that you only have on one social media platform or one cloud service, you don't really own those memories. You're just a tenant.
That's a sobering thought. Maybe I'll go through our old hard drives this weekend and see if anything needs to be etched in stone on an M-Disc.
I'll bring the vacuum sealer.
Please don't. But you know, this whole discussion about the durability of physical media versus the ephemeral nature of the cloud, it reminds me of some of our recent episodes on invisible tech systems and layered networks. We talked about how we're moving toward these systems that we don't even see or think about, but that also means we lose a lot of control.
Oh, that's a great connection. We want things to be invisible and seamless. But the cost of that seamlessness is often our own agency and our own understanding of how things work. When you hold a disk in your hand, you understand exactly where your data is. When it's in the cloud, it could be anywhere or nowhere.
Right. The more layers of abstraction we add, the more points of failure we create. A disk and a laser is a very simple system compared to a global network of servers, routers, and satellite links.
Simplicity is its own kind of sophistication. I think that's the real takeaway here. Sometimes the old way is still the best way for specific high-stakes problems.
Well, I think we've thoroughly explored the weird world of Daniel's closet today. It's fascinating to see how these technologies don't just die. They just find their true purpose once the hype cycle moves on.
Exactly. The CD wasn't just for music. It was a stepping stone to permanent digital storage. And who knows? Maybe in 50 years, we'll be talking about how those old-fashioned quartz glass slabs were the only reason we still know anything about the early 21st century.
I hope so. I hope someone in the year 2500 finds a piece of glass and sees our podcast on it.
Two brothers in Jerusalem talking about discs. They'll be very confused, but hopefully entertained.
Hopefully. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap this one up. Daniel, thanks for the prompt and for the trip down memory lane. I'm going to go help him move the rest of those boxes now.
And I'm going to go see if I can find a femtosecond laser on the secondhand market.
Of course you are. Hey, if you've been enjoying the show, we'd really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find us and join in on these deep dives.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. We love seeing the community grow and hearing your thoughts on these topics.
You can find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com, where we have our full archive and a contact form if you want to send us a prompt of your own. And of course, we're on Spotify and all the usual places.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone. Stay curious.
And keep those lasers clean.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.